Ramble.
2 households, both alike in dignity and fair guilty pleasures, where we lay our scene.
I'm shocked you didn't Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Wherefore art thou? Welcome to Guilty Pleasures. Wherefore art thou? Welcome to Guilty Pleasures.
Ooh.
Nice. Gang, what's up? Today we're talking about Baz Luhrmann's Romeo plus Juliet.
To be or not to be, whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or take up arms against them, to die, to sleep no more. And by asleep we say to dream that what natural sorrows in this life may come.
Miles is also whispering the words.
Can I just ask a question about Shakespeare before we get into it?
Hell yeah.
Why?
Why are you so goofy?
Why?
But why did we idolize this man?
I don't know.
Because he wrote a bunch of shit.
I don't know.
I don't understand any of it.
I am sick of
it's
this
so
dude.
Flowery.
Okay. Okay. All right, kids. Okay. Settle down. I'll give you a little context.
Oh.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so.
Miles was a theater.
I was a theater major. Uh-huh. Now, obviously, Shakespeare is kind of like when you read it now, you're like, man, this is a slog, or you see a bad pursuit
production.
Yeah,
but everything is based off of it.
You're like, man, this is shitty. And if you feel that way, which I get.
I don't
you
think
should
see me do it.
Yeah, you should see
and
Zach
your
do it.
Life it's will change.
Fantastic. No, you should watch the priest from Fleabag,
yes.
The actor. I don't know his name.
He's an incredible Shakespearean actor.
An incredible Shakespearean actor. Yeah. And I find that when you watch a clip of him doing Shakespeare, you realize that it is human language that should not feel foreign. It should feel very like regular. And when it's spoken that way, it kind of feels like, oh, this is just an elevated version of somebody talking, and it's very easy to understand because it's just the emotion that's going on.
That's not my question, but thank you for that. My question is, why did we choose this man to beat into every child's brain in public school?
There's a couple reasons. One, his stories have stood the test of time, and he's written a fuck ton of them.
His story structures.
I think it's the entire story. It's the entire story. It's the language of it too, the poetry of it. There's also the rumor that some people think that Shakespeare actually is an accumulation of multiple writers and that we've just conflated into one person. I don't know if I believe that. I'm not a historian. But
why do we feel he is important to know?
Because he was one of the first to do story on that scale in a way that's like feels still relevant.
Agreed. Yeah. But if you're not a theater major or someone who wants to get into literature, again, why the fuck does everyone need to know?
Is your question why you should learn about the arts?
No. Why Shakespeare
Kelsey wants to defund arts in school.
Oh, yeah. My God. I just remember so many years of being forced to read Shakespeare in public school in Florida that I'm like, who is this helping?
What's interesting too is that Shakespeare in school, you then are reading it in your stupid head,
yes,
and then you're hearing your classmates read it, and it's terrible.
It's terrible.
And what you need is really good interpretations, and that brings us to a movie like this, where suddenly it comes to life.
Yes,
and you're like, oh, this. I mean, this movie's crazy, and there's so much to talk about, but one thing you'll say is that you feel it.
Oh, yeah. This movie was made for children to be shown it in school so that you don't have to read it. It's for the teacher that doesn't want you to have to read it. They roll the TV in and they go, we're going to watch this instead.
This is exactly what happened in my school. This
yeah?
is what happened in my drama class.
Lucky.
We basically just watched this rendition of Romeo and Juliet in order to prepare for the play. I was not in the play. I just saw it. But that must have been
torture.
Oh,
that
it was
play.
The worst.
That
was,
play must terrible. Have been miserable.
It was fucking worse. Imagine not getting a part and then having to watch your part played by two other people.
You auditioned.
Jokes on them. Look at you now.
I mean, hey, it is what it is.
On a television show, acting.
I'm a television show, but not in Shakespearean speak because fuck that language. Fuck that language, dog. Like, okay, I'm so sorry. Like, I understand how beautiful it sounds and all of that stuff. I don't understand a word they are saying. Because, the context of, like, of the emotions that are going on and all that stuff, but the context of human language just doesn't come across as well if what I'm saying wholly is an interpretation.
It's like 50% of it. I'm like, I could understand what he means.
That.
Juliet is the sun. He's saying she's beautiful. I could understand that. Right. But then sometimes they just be saying shit.
This is why songs are short. This is why rap songs are short. This is why everything is short, because you could look up the lyrics while you're listening to the song.
Brevity is the soul of wit.
There it is. Yeah. Sure.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. Agreed.
I understand what that meant.
Yeah. It makes me feel dumb in the same way that every time that Succession goes into like business speak and you're just like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
You know, a lot of this was slang that he invented.
Really?
So even people watching it back then were like, what are these goofy words you say?
Okay. See, there it is. He was the first.
Up.
He's the first rapper.
Fuck.
God
man.
Damn it.
God fucking damn it.
British people invented rap.
Oh, no, they didn't. No,
they
the
did.
Fuck, they did not.
Drew.
No, false.
Yeah. Wow, I want to punch me.
Can I say, as a devout musical theater nerd and theater child and literature lover, I never saw this movie. Last night was the first time.
Wow.
I don't know how, where, or when I never saw this. But the fact that it was Leonardo DiCaprio at his was he of age?
Yes.
Can I talk about Oh my God. At his prime hotness and doing Shakespeare and doing a love story and Claire Danes.
And Baz Luhrmann's goofiness.
And Baz Luhrmann, whom we love.
Baz Luhrmann is very goofy.
He is the it's so crazy that you had never seen this, and there's so much to talk about, so let's dive the fuck into it.
Yes. The Great Gatsby, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
If you have never seen Romeo and Juliet, you fucking have. You know this story.
Yeah, you know what it is.
You've seen this story done a million times in a million different ways.
Greatest tragedy.
But this is Baz Luhrmann taking the story of Romeo and Juliet and bringing it into the modern day, but keeping the classic language. I think what makes this movie special is the Baz Luhrmannification of it. Honestly, I don't even need to give you the plot. I just want to dive into the opening. Mm-hmm. Because the opening of this movie is...
I think it should be studied.
If you... If you have a memory of Romeo plus Juliet from childhood, maybe you're like me and Garrick, you watched it in school, you watched it as a kid, you have this... I mean, I remember the fish tank, but I didn't remember how this movie opens. And it is one of the most badass, high-octane, incredible... It takes... Baz Luhrmann said, I know that you think that Shakespeare is stuffy and old. No, this is vibrant. This is modern. This is electric. It is as vital now as it always has been.
And Shakespeare
was meant to be a party. It was meant to feel like a party. When you went to see a performance, it's like meant to rouse people. You had the cheap seats. The audience would pay for cheap seats so you would have like the common people and they would be drunk and rowdy, and it was then all the noble people were up in the rafters among, so like Shakespeare was like alive and
cheap seats were up close
and it was interactive, like, and people would be
and
jeering
you
and
can't see the whole thing. Sorry.
So anyway, the opening of this movie is like fucking Mad Max Fury Road, balls to the wall. Just full throttle.
Full throttle, full orange, full saturation. It is very bright.
Full tilt. Camera zooms.
You got as I was watching this, I was like, this is like if Romeo and Juliet was a skateboarding video.
Oh yeah.
Of the '90s. Like it just felt like that form of like thrasher video of like, you know, the heavy saturation. I almost thought it was filmed from a fisheye lens. That's how like nineties it was.
It feels like a trailer for itself.
You start with
this tiny TV. Mm-hmm. It's of a news report of in Fair Verona, where we lay our scene, which is such a fun way
to
take that open. It's basically Venice Beach.
Yeah, is it Venice Beach or is it Las Vegas or is it New York?
It's definitely not New York.
It's not New York. It felt like it was shot in Venice, or like the style of Venice Beach
in Miami and Mexico City in Mexico.
Okay, and then
it feels like Venice Beach.
It feels like Venice.
Yeah,
it feels like Las Vegas as well,
and like downtown and LA with the helicopters.
Oh, yeah. Because it's LA rival gangs.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
But you have this montage with like boom title of the name, like Capulet, her father. Blank.
Yeah. Freeze
Montague.
Frame.
Yeah.
Freeze frame of all. And it introduces this cast of characters. And it's such a wild way to start this movie.
And that's why I thought it was in Las Vegas, because of them being, the heads of a family were Italian.
Yeah.
It just felt like, it's like, I don't know if LA gangs would have heads of a family being Italian.
You also have the two towers for Montague and Capulet are across the street from each other. And it does have like a Vegas strip type approach.
Oh, it does have a Lucky Number Schlevin type of feel to it. Absolutely.
It's Burning Man. It's dusty. it's neon lights.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's bright. It's shiny. It feels like a slot machine.
Yeah, it does. It does. That's I think it's in Vegas / Miami.
Sure. Why not?
Let's talk about geography a little more.
Yeah,
it's in I would say, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
One thing, I mean, this movie is so, the emotions are, it's both a pleasure and a guilt. The emotions are ramped up to 14 from the opening. Everyone is screaming.
Yeah.
Their it's like they're children on the verge of a temper tantrum, the way they're performing it sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's almost theater-like in that they're... expressions have to be seen from the back row. They're lifting their eyebrows all the way up. They're turning their heads.
Oh my God.
Their movements are huge.
Huge.
Their voices are projecting, and you're like, Jesus, like you're almost kind of taken aback by the energy, which is so, let me tell you, having no idea what this was about was so fucking fun, because the person I was watching it with had seen it, and he was like,
you have no idea.
And it was the most bossiest, like, I thought Moulin Rouge was as colorful, saturated, big. This was like taking characters from Moulin Rouge and putting them into Romeo and Juliet. Everyone's costume is to the umpteenth degree. The colors, the music, the singing, like, there was just so much... ramped up that you're like, how could this possibly be grounded? How could this possibly make me emotional? How could this possibly capture this tiny relationship? And it manages to do it all.
Yeah. I think we gotta, I would love to start off on this secret genius of John Leguizamo.
Fuck yes.
He's so fucking good.
Like, he's always
good. Every time you see him, he's just like, oh, this is a Leguizamo performance. Yeah. This just feels right and correct. He, like, the way that he is cast, or the way that he fits himself into a production, is always sensational.
He's Tybalt, right?
He's Tybalt. Yeah. But it's just like, I don't even know where to begin with him, because his career spans such a long scope of time. I feel like he's been famous my entire life.
Yeah.
But in, like, I don't think that he's a part of, like, the greats conversation, and it's really disrespectful.
Mm-hmm. He's always been just a little little disrespected.
Yes,
but great for as long as we've lived.
Leguizamo
legacy.
Leguizamo legacy.
Add it to the sticker pack.
Yeah, I do feel like he has, like, a Tucci-esque performance ability, where he can just kind of meld into a role, whether you like him to or not.
When I think of peak Johnny L, this role is up there for me. You have the famous, do you bite your thumb at me, sir?
Yeah.
Which I remember reading in school and be like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah. Why are they biting? And in this scene, I feel it.
You know what's going on.
You understand the language. They really did a good job of translating the language into action that teenagers who have zero interest in Shakespeare could talk. You're like, oh, that's what biting your thumb at me
meant. Just being a disrespectful ass.
Yes.
And they have this gas station standoff. But John Leguizamo, so, I mean, you have these, like, young, these doofuses, really. I thought that one of the guys was... from Baby's Day Out. It's a different actor. But you have not Jamie Kennedy and not Baby's Day Out in their car. And then John Leguizamo comes out and he has his, like, steel
metal,
toe, steel heel boots.
Yeah.
He's smoking a cigarette. The sound effects
Open
of him
smoking cigarettes at a gas station, which is illegal.
Bold.
It's illegal.
Bold.
The move that John Leguizamo does when the shootout starts, he drops to both of his knees, arches his back, and in one fluid motion, rips his shirt off and takes out two guns. It is the most badass anyone's ever looked.
It's so sick. And then if you want to think of it in, you know, back in those days or whatever, like, they're saying that the guns are swords or Yeah, yeah, they're saying that the guns are swords.
They're sword 9mm.
They're sword 9mm. I love it. Fucking hilarious. But back in that time, if somebody pulled out two fucking swords, you're like, oh, this is the baddest human of all time.
You're like, this man's crazy.
This man is fucking crazy. Yeah. He doesn't have any skill or talent. He just has two swords.
And he's insane.
He's insane.
Do you want to talk about our leads, or do you want to talk about Boz?
Boz first, because I also have a thing about Claire Danes.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So, it's impossible to not talk about this movie without talking about the Boz Luhrmann of it all. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned the color. The pacing is relentless. Oh. And I mean scene to scene, but also even just in how characters move across the room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He does that Looney Tunes shit where, like, I think he almost intentionally overshoots the length of scenes just so that he can later make them go ding, 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 ding,
run across the screen a little faster.
It's really crazy.
It's so dude, I was talking about this last night. The way that this man can fucking shoot the fuck out of a party scene. This man can not only shoot energy, he can shoot a drug trip like nobody's fucking business. His editing, which this was edited by a woman, which I thought was really fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
And the editing makes you feel like you are on drugs. And you're like, that's what you feel like the first time you fall in love with a woman. You're like, I could be with this girl forever. I feel like I'm high when I see her.
Yeah.
You feel in the filmmaking.
He also was high.
Yeah, he was on drugs.
He was on drugs.
Which kind of makes this whole thing make sense when you're like, how did they fall in love so fast? I mean, you're like, on drugs.
Has anyone, any filmmaker ever put fireworks to better use than Boz Luhrmann?
No.
Because I feel like it is, I mean, maybe like the little sparks that come off of Michael Bay explosions, but
those are CGI.
Yeah, true.
These are
practical.
Not.
Yeah. He does not do CGI
Michael Bay
a lot.
Ever?
He doesn't do a lot. No, not ever, but
his explosions are real.
Oh, that's right.
But yeah, I think that fireworks are his signature. Because, like, if you look at like The Great Gatsby, it's bathed in fucking.
Color
works, fireworks, all of that shit.
I'm curious your thoughts here, Garrick, because I feel like his filmmaking is unlike anything else seen in live action, and really the only corollary I can think of is in animation.
Oh, I was going to say in Speed Racer. which is an animated film, technically.
Animated live action. That's a great point.
Speed Racer.
There are firework moments in Speeders remind me of that.
Absolutely.
But it's like, it's not exactly impressionistic, but it borders on it. Like, the way that he uses light and color and performance and pacing, he's not going for realism. I don't even know if he's going
for
a little bit for emotional realism.
Yeah.
But it's just all about ramping things up.
Yeah.
And that's something that you really typically only see in animated films.
In animation, where like animated films, a lot of the stuff is just interpreted. Let's just see like what this feeling feels like. And I am so sorry. I'm bringing up a bit of like spoilers with this.
We all know.
No, not with this movie. With Across the Spider-Verse.
Oh. Wait, I haven't seen it.
I know you haven't seen it, but
I'm
not going to say anything like awful.
Okay.
But there is a scene where two characters are talking to each other and the background is changing with their emotions. And you're like, oh, fuck, this is crazy. And I feel like Boz Luhrmann does that type of shit.
It's stunning. The moment you're talking about specifically, it's like watercolors and it starts dripping.
And it's twice. They do it twice. Anyway.
And I saw that moment was actually inspired by a moment in Cinderella where Cinderella is being like chastised by her sisters, and the color, you first watch it, you don't even process it, but the color of the background
Cinderella,
changes.
The cartoon
changes from maybe like a yellow or a green into like a crimson red from shot to shot as she's being berated. And that's the kind of thing where like, you're not really meant to notice it, but you feel it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think love it or hate it, and there are times that I love it with Boz Luhrmann, there are times that I'm like, this is crazy,
this is
and too much,
yeah.
But you have to respect it.
His filmmaking style is candy. Like, it's just so much fucking candy. And if you overdose, if you eat too much candy,
You feel sick.
And you overdose on it, and you're like, oh my God, I'm getting a sugar high, and now I'm getting a sugar crash.
You feel weird.
Like,
your tum-tum hurts.
I feel like if Boz Luhrmann got into television, and it was just like 30-minute chunks, beautiful.
You know what reminds me, the thing that I could not get enough of, and I wanted even more, was, and this is with all of Boz's stuff, is he set dresses the fuck of his production designs. Like, my, one of my favorite that made me feel weird, that gave me a tum-tum ache, is the, I guess it's like the Montague Hangouts on the beach that's like meant to be the Venice Beach.
Yeah.
And it's like a rundown carnival meets Mad Max meets like Burning Man party.
There's this giant slab of concrete that just has a hole blasted through it for no reason where they hang
just,
out.
They just hang
You know, I didn't even register. You're right. It's a fucking carnival on the beach. Yeah. Why?
Yes,
why?
Because
it's fucking Miami slash Vegas slash LA. And everything's crazy.
And even the, like, even outside of that, you go to the houses and you've got these sprawling estates where you, it makes you feel you're back in Renaissance time, but you realize this is just Beverly Hills. This is just a fancy Beverly Hills home where you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
This man has such a way with dressing and and accoutrements.
It's rich with detail.
The picture.
We've gone too far. We must talk about the leads of this film. Yeah. The titular role. Let us begin with Romeo.
Thank God.
Leo DiCaprio.
The way that I think this man's face must have been the inspiration for Botox. Because his face is unnaturally smooth in a way that is, it is genetically gifted. Let's be real. This man has nothing wrong with his face.
I didn't even think about
that. He is so smooth. I didn't get enough of his face. And half of the movie is just close up of Romeo's faces. Leonardo DiCaprio acted his motherfucking tits off. The first time I heard him say a Shakespeare line, I went, oh no, oh no, come on, this can't be good. Boy, did he prove me wrong.
Yeah.
This man acted the best I have ever seen him act.
Wow.
Better than Titanic.
I went, oh my God, how embarrassing to go from this to Titanic love story.
Really?
Embarrassing.
Oh.
He is screaming, crying on the ground at the sky. His tears acted. His tears had cues.
Oh, damn.
He lost his fucking shit. He didn't want to be put in this position.
Yeah.
He didn't want to be the bad boy, but he had no choice. And he goes fucking crazy by the end. He's a gangster by the end, shooting at the fucking cops. This guy said a cab when he wasn't even in the game.
Wowie.
I mean, he was in the gang. It's his family, you know.
Yeah, but he wasn't. He was by marriage. Yeah, he didn't want to be
in the game.
In the gang, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good performance. And
my family. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
By blood.
By blood, yeah.
It's a really great performance. And what struck me, so when I was a kid, reading Romeo and Juliet, seeing productions of it, and seeing like this, I always thought of Romeo as the ultimate heartthrob.
Ugh.
And that is because of the casting.
Absolutely.
But what I actually think he does a good job of playing, and what I'm realizing now as I'm older, they are tempestuous children.
Oh, yeah.
They are idiots.
Yeah.
They are, this is not love, it is limerence.
Yep, there you
they
go.
Are Romeo. He is in love with another woman.
Yes.
When we meet him, he is so crazy about this girl, Rosalind, that he is like, I cannot live. Yeah. I cannot breathe without her. And then he sees another girl. He sees Juliet, and he's like, I'm ready to die for her.
It is just about teenage angst.
Yes.
Like, this whole thing is just about teenage angst. And it really, like you were saying, this is the first Romeo and Juliet production I had ever seen. So it's just like, so this is what it's about. So this is the only way that I ever saw it, was these teenage star-crossed lovers falling in love with each other. How not to act.
It's a cautionary tale.
Civil. Yeah,
yes.
It is a cautionary tale.
Because think about it. Like, listen,
no, it is just
I was a dramatic teen who fell in love with the football star, and I get it. I've been head over heels, crying on the ground. I have nothing to live for. This is the end of my days.
Mm.
And I got through it, thank fucking God. And you realize, but I can't help but say, that is truly how it feels when you are a hormonal teenager thinking you're in love for the first time. This takes place over 3 days.
Jesus. Romeo is not... is not love goals.
No.
Romeo is the original MySpace boy.
Yeah.
He's the original Tumblr girl.
Yeah.
Romeo is an emo bitch.
What's the guy from You? What's his name?
Joe Goldberg.
This is the original Joe Goldberg. Okay. It's too much. It's too intense.
The whole scene with him at the window, and it's just like, you know, the daylight, whatever.
Light through yonder window breaks.
The east and Juliet is the sun.
Yeah, all that stuff. All that good stuff. He's just like, oh, this is supposed to be like this beautiful scene. And then she comes down, and then he's just hiding in the fucking bushes.
Yo, but that hiding in the vines. Scene. It was hot. This goes back to Boz. You could put that scene anywhere.
Yeah.
He plays a game out of the most fun, intense scene, starting in water through the aquarium and then ending in water. And it's,
he loves getting wet.
He loves it.
Yeah. Romeo, we meet him. He is writing poetry in his notebook.
How hot.
This bitch is, he is so...
Right,
love struck.
Then.
Yeah.
Poetry's great.
It's cute.
He is not our love goals. He is writing MCR lyrics in his away message.
Damn.
He is pining for love in the worst of ways.
Yeah.
This is something that I need to tell myself. Because when I was a kid, I thought Romeo was the goal. I thought you wanted to find your Juliet. No. If you ever feel like this, you fucking run.
Yeah.
It was intense.
Or fucking rub one out, man. I don't know what else to tell you. Like, it feels like he needed the post-cum clarity. And he just... I'm sorry. I can't say that. Can I not?
I think it's important that you say it.
Okay, cool.
Post-nut clarity?
Post-cum clarity.
Which is worse.
No, CC. Alliteration is always top.
It's what Shakespeare would have wanted.
Absolutely. But if it's 3 days and it's just like, I am crazy over this person, but I had just seen Rosaline or whatever, I was just seeing her. Yeah, just go do what you got to do and figure it out.
I will say that this visualization of the entire story of Romeo and Juliet pointed out a couple really huge things for me that I didn't know just by reading the text. Mm. And one is that basically Romeo says, you're going to leave me without fucking me? Mm-hmm. The first night we met? Really? Yeah. You're going to leave me unsatisfied?
So unsatisfied.
Yeah. So unsatisfied. And she basically goes, put a ring on it, bitch, and then we'll do it.
Yeah.
Put a ring on it. And I went, oh, Romeo, he's after one thing.
There are a lot of sexual innuendos in Shakespeare that, again, we didn't get as kids. Mm-hmm. There's also a line that I had read a million times, and it wasn't until Claire Danes read it that I was like, oh. She goes, nor any other part belonging to a man. She talking about his dick.
Yeah.
Because it's the what is a rose by any other name. She's talking about a name is just this. A man is this. Or his dick.
Damn. Yeah.
So let's talk about Claire Danes, our young Juliet.
All right. Claire Danes. Claire Danes is, I believe, quietly one of the best actresses of our generation. She won an Emmy when she was 15.
What?
Maybe for My So-Called Life.
I didn't know that.
And then she has four, and then she won one for Homeland. She won one for another production I don't remember. And then a fourth one. And I feel like in this, she is sensational, of course, as Juliet. You see Claire Danes and you're like, why is she in this? Most of the time, whenever I see Claire Danes, I'm like, why the fuck is she in this? And then you get to those very, very emotional scenes.
And you're like,
oh, fuck. It's Claire Danes. I'm an idiot. That is my fault for assuming the worst of who you are because your star caliber isn't as, or your recognizability is not as high as I would assume. Like in Fleischman, where you see her in that show and you're like, why the fuck is Claire Danes in this? She's too big.
She's a movie star.
This kind of came out of nowhere, blah, blah, blah. And then you get to episode 7. You're like, Jesus fucking Christ.
The best episode on TV.
She's acting her ass off. She will win an Emmy again for that role. Anyway, but I do feel like seeing her in this, I had the exact same reaction where I was like, oh, wow, Claire Danes. That's an interesting choice for Juliet. And then you get to the ending. You get to all of these other different scenes. And she's just sensational. Every fucking time she gets lines, I feel like she's like, yeah, I'm going to knock this out of the park. But I'm just going to go chill in my trailer for a second. But just know when I come out.
She did the language better than anyone in the course. Film, I think.
I agree.
100%.
It sounded so natural coming
every,
out of her
every
mouth.
Time she actually said something, I was like, oh, I understand what she's saying. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what any of these other dudes are saying. Yeah. Maybe between the two. Between the two, I caught most of it. But
it's unbelievable the way that she's able to not deliver subtext, text.
Yeah.
She's able to deliver text.
Text.
It doesn't matter what she's saying. I feel it and I understand it.
Yeah.
I'm going to fast forward and then we'll come back to them meeting. But there's a moment where she comes to see Friar Lawrence. She's going to ask for Poison to kill herself. Mm. And she burst through the door in this like emo beret.
Yeah.
She has the pilgrim collar.
The outfit.
It is such a funny outfit. And she's got this moody little like, I'm so sad, I'm going to kill myself. Yeah. And she grabs...
Do you think this movie is what started the emo phase?
Whoa! Like, Romeo and Juliet, evil, emo as hell.
Because I don't know. Like I'm thinking about like the this was like during the punk era, right?
This is 96.
I wish that 96. This had sprung more berets on our emo kid, our scene kids.
Yeah.
But she comes into the room. She takes a gun to her head, and she is screaming. And that still frame, there's more acting in that still frame than most people accomplish in their careers.
Truly. I really was like, damn, Leo is showing up for this role. How could this possibly? Because she's very flowery in the beginning. It's not until she faces hardship that you get to see that emotion. I was like, how is anyone going to compete with Leo? And she fucking knocks it out of the park. She's so fucking good at this. And you're right, the outfits help.
The triumph of this movie, to me, lies purely in their meeting.
Mm.
And this is something that is so burned into my brain because we were all like discovering our bodies. Like, not even teenagers. We were like mid-pubescent kids watching this and
they
being like,
let you watch it at school?
Yeah.
It is, they see each other. Romeo's wearing his little like knight's chain armor.
Oh my God.
She's got the angel wings.
Oh,
they're at the party.
God.
The fireworks are lighting up their face. They spot each other from across the room. Romeo goes in for the kiss at me. Oh no, actually, sorry. They're in the bathroom.
Oh yeah.
Mm.
And the fish tank.
That fish tank scene.
I don't know where in his mind he thought that the fish tank is the most romantic thing people can meet through.
Yeah.
But he's right. I don't know what it is, but you have like the cool blue light, the fish in the foreground.
I think it was foreshadowing his fate in Titanic. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
Ding dong.
Please continue.
It really, and it was a lot of straight on portrait shots, which I loved. Like, you got to see their faces just back and forth. You're just cutting over the shoulder, over the shoulder, over the shoulder. And it was so beautiful, and you're seeing every moment of them falling in love with each other without saying a single word.
Here is what's so remarkable about it, too, okay? It's perfectly shot, but it's perfectly paced and performed.
Yeah.
Because the movie has been 800 miles an hour, nonstop, rapid cutting, rapid performance, loud, bombastic, and now for the first time in the movie, 20-something minutes in, it stops.
Yeah.
And time slows down, and we feel it. And what is remarkable to me, too, it's fascinating, because no words are needed in that scene. The most effective moments in this movie, this adaptation of Shakespeare, which is all about the language, the most effective moments in this movie are silent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a testament to the characters that Shakespeare created. Maybe it's just the way Baz Luhrmann's, the acting, or the way that Baz Luhrmann's filmmaking has interpreted it. But there's a few moments throughout the movie where silence is utilized very effectively.
Yeah.
And to me, those are the standouts.
I'm going to say it is because of the context of Romeo and Juliet in general.
Yeah, probably.
There's like, we have those, like, there are certain movies and shows where you're like, when are these two people going to meet? When are these two people going to fucking see each other? Oh, my God. They're trying to get to each other this entire time. And I think that you have that energy and that context throughout this entire movie where you're like, I know how it's going to end. I know that this is like going to be a love whirlwind. And I am literally just pining for the fact that they are about to see each other. And then when they do, I feel like Boz knew that this was going to be like as big of a moment as possible. So it's just like, let me just drop all of the gimmicks, all of the act, and just look at them, look at each other.
I had never seen this movie, but watching it, I realized that I had seen this more in Tumblr posts going up. I didn't know where any of that shit was from. I thought it was from that Drew Barrymore castle movie for all I fucking knew with the angel wings and shit. And I was like, who are these gorgeous teenagers? And I was like, oh, it's such art pieces, these shots of them together in the stillness, in the pool, in their kissing, in these little quiet moments. It's the most memeable, most repostable aesthetic of what falling in love and being in love feels like.
Who do you think is more handsome, Brad Pitt or Leonardo DiCaprio?
Now or back then? Because I have different answers.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Leo was the quintessential pretty boy and heartthrob. And it's funny, if you look at beauty standards for men now versus then, it has shifted. He adds more of like that beauty standard. You kind of see it in K-pop more than anything.
Yeah.
Because he is soft. He is delicate. He's not like built up.
No.
He's not big. You see him with the shirt off. You're like, oh, he's like a little frail boy.
Yeah.
But he is beautiful. Yeah. And back then, that was
Brad Pitt was like Fight Club, greasy, rough around the edges. Yeah, and Leonardo DiCaprio was like the guy you could maybe run into in your neighborhood who was like climbing a tree that you'd fall in love with.
Mm. Leo was so pretty that all the boys were also straight boys were also like, I mean, I can see it. I mean, I get it.
Can I say that I don't want to deter from what we're talking about with their meeting, but we have to just very quickly acknowledge our very own. This is how good this movie is that we've gone this far without saying Paul Rudd's name.
Oh my God.
Paul Rudd as
when he popped up, I was like, oh my God, is that fucking Paul Rudd?
It's fucking Paul Rudd.
And you know what? He looks exactly the same. He's a fucking vampire, and we've been trying to prove it our entire lives.
He's playing a goofy
He did Paul Rudd. He had it down since 96.
We've all been just paying this man to be himself.
Go back and watch the scene where Romeo and Juliet have just met. They are looking at each other. Juliet is dancing with Paul Rudd. And so all of our eyes are on Claire Danes and Leo DiCaprio. But meanwhile, right behind them, Paul Rudd is doing his little goofy boy dance.
Paul Rudding so hard.
And he is Paul Rudding harder than anyone has ever Paul Rudded in their life.
That smile does not leave his face for the entire movie. And he's only in a couple of scenes, but he fucking... Especially knowing who he is now. That's such a fun watch.
I feel like that is Paul Rudd being like, hey, I know you want to cast me as the handsome guy all the time, or the one that is not handsome enough to get the girl, but handsome enough to be potentially the one.
To nominated.
To be, it's an honor to be nominated. I feel like that's his entire facial vibe. But... he's like, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to be funny. I am a funny person. No matter how you want to paint me, I am hilarious.
Yes. Oh, you cast me to be beautiful? Actually, I'm a goofy little bitch.
I'm a goofy little bitch.
He was giving nerdy hot guys.
I'm going to ask you this point blank, because I think Paul Rudd was a babe then. Yeah. He's a babe now. You're dancing with Paul Rudd. I might choose Paul Rudd over Leo.
Oh.
In that moment? Absolutely not. I love Paul Rudd. I would literally die for him. I would leave all of my relationships to be with him. In that moment,
Leo's a little fuck boy. Okay, he leans in for the kiss before they've barely even talked. Meanwhile, Paul Rudd, goofy little bitch.
It's a feeling,
Zach.
But
he also just got, she just got like offered to him. I feel like they weren't dating or anything
if my parents
like that.
Trying to force anyone my parents wanted me to date, I was like, no.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's so much... to talk about in this movie that we also haven't talked about.
What?
What to me is one of the defining triumphs of this movie, Harold Perrineau as Mercutio.
Iconic
with a capital I. I'm talking about Michael from Lost screaming Walt to his little boy.
Oh, is that where he's from?
I accidentally
said Walking Dead.
No. Put some respect on Lost.
How
name.
Dare you?
I barely watched.
You said that you thought that Leo, you thought Claire Danes. To me, I think that Harold Perrineau gives the best performance in this movie.
He
brings Mercutio to life.
Yeah.
Actually, what are we talking about? There's a lot of really good standout performances.
It's just like he let him run. Like if it's Mercutio's scene, I'm running.
Mercutio
I'm wearing a dress.
cooking from the moment he enters.
Yeah, absolutely.
But can I say why he has to? None of his dialogue made sense. There, if there was one person that I couldn't understand the Shakespeare less coming from, he had to perform his... He went, well, no one's going to understand what my mouth is doing. Yeah. My body is going to be the performance.
Because I feel like...
Thank God for that.
Also, all of his words were... It's just him being a silly Billy. I feel like...
Silly Billy!
It's him being like this weird, like, just eccentric type of person. And if you're doing that back then, I'm sure you understand... what's going in Shakespearean time. I'm sure you're understanding a little bit more closely what's going on, because it's just like, this is what, like, you know, jesters do. This is the type of attitude they have. Okay, cool. I have that context. And then I also kind of understand what is being said, what he's saying. So I understand it a little bit more. But for us, where it's like double confusing, it's just like I don't even have the context historically, on top of the fact that this is Shakespearean speak.
He's a drag queen.
Yeah.
He's playing a drag queen.
Yeah.
And I think it also nods to the fact that back in those times, men often wore heels and makeup and dressed up very what we consider feminine, especially for theater.
Yeah.
And so the performance he gives, where you like come out and you're like, oh, wait, what? Is this problematic? Like, what? Why is he like that? And then you're like, oh, I get what he's there to service. And he does it times 10.
I feel like this performance inspired Chris Tucker in The Fifth Element.
I thought about that.
Yeah.
He's a foil of sorts to Tybalt. You know, John Leguizamo has this like very serious, moody, and Mercutio on the other side is garish and big and loud and flamboyant and fun. He busts into the movie like, I mean, this movie is full of adrenaline. He is the shot of adrenaline through Uma Thurman's heart in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
this guy is wearing a big silver wig, lipstick, a long flowy cape.
Yeah.
His dress was silver. His hair was black.
Thank
but
you.
The wig was black. Yeah.
Okay. I just remember silver, black, lipstick, high heels,
face drag queen.
he presents a pill of what we assume is ecstasy or something adjacent on his finger. He is having the time of his life. Something that I also love is that he sings some iambic pentameter.
Yes.
So like he is they interpret some Shakespeare language as song that he is performing. It just, you know, Harold Perrineau, there was a big article about Lost that just came out, and he talked about, you know, feeling like he wasn't given a fair shot as an actor, as a black actor, and feeling like the people of color on that show, both behind the scenes and on the show, were not given the opportunities that they deserve.
Yeah. Mm.
And watching his performance in this movie, you have to go, oh, systemic racism has to exist in Hollywood.
Oh, absolutely.
Because how could someone give a performance that good and not be by now a household name?
Yeah.
Very true.
Harold Perrineau has had, by all measures, a great career, not to the measure that his talent deserves.
Absolutely.
It is unreal what he does.
He's undeniably talented, and he has been denied several times.
Oh, yeah?
It's pretty unfortunate.
I hear I haven't watched From, which is a new show that he's on, but I hear it is fucking awesome.
Huh.
So that is my my pleasure for this week, a show I haven't watched. Support Harold, because he deserves it.
Yeah.
He deserves it.
I just, every scene that he's in, I think the movie just gets better. It gets fun. And that is the idea that we talked about up top, that like Shakespeare's supposed to be electric and fun. Yeah. And he captures that vibe.
Good point. Yeah. He probably was the most Shakespeare, besides the fact that I couldn't understand it. That makes it more Shakespearean. But you're so right that like anytime he came on screen, even in the spoiler alert moment where he's murdered, was so
spoiler alert for Romeo and Juliet.
Fun. Well, people might have forgot like who dies what sparks who. But like his death scene is even a hoot. Yeah. It is nothing but a scratch. You're just like, this man is crazy.
Tybalt comes in and he says the line like, I kick my heels up at him or something. He puts his feet up on the table. They fight. Tybalt starts beating the shit out of Romeo. Romeo was like, I have nothing but love for you. It makes it so frustrating to watch. The whole second half of this movie is so frustrating because
none of it needed to happen.
Just like he's stuck in Shakespearean language. I'm like, Leo, just say, I'm sorry. Yeah, right. Just say I'm sorry and I love your cousin.
Yeah.
Mercutio gets in the way, gets slashed with glass. And that line, a plague on both your houses, is a line that growing up I did not understand.
I didn't either.
When Mercutio says it, I'm like, oh, fuck both of you. You petty little bitches, your quabbles, your children, your childlike fighting with each other. Fuck your family. I'm dead because of you.
Yeah.
A plague on both your houses.
That's when I really got the, like, the nonsense of it all. Because at the end of the day, this is a tragedy.
Yeah.
The same way, like, Succession is a tragedy from the start. The creators were like, this was never going to end where everyone was like, we're happy. You keep remembering that, like, what's keeping these families apart is all ego. And back then, there was no solving. There was no language to be using to resolve the family ego. Like, even at the death of both of their children, these families will not stop quarreling.
And let's talk.
I'm sorry, I'm just thinking about Succession, man. Like, that ending was bad. Anyway, please continue.
Bad.
No, it was bad. Great. Fucking, it hurt. It hurt my feelings.
Yeah, okay, that's what.
Yeah,
but it's
continue.
The same way of this, where it's like, it led us to believe maybe something else could happen.
Yeah, and I think after watching this, I was like, Succession is the closest that we have to a Shakespearean play.
Yeah, 100%.
Not unfortunately, it just
but
is what
just
it
for
is.
My feelings.
And let's talk about the tragedy of it all, because you do. Almost like with the story of Eurydice, like, you watch the ending of this and you go, maybe this time it's gonna work.
Yeah.
Maybe this time it'll be different, and you know it won't be.
Yeah.
It's
but
so frustrating.
The ending of this movie is maybe the most frustrating that I've ever seen Romeo and Juliet be because of the way that they restage it ever so slightly. So we all know the story. Juliet takes a poison that is going to make her seem dead for X hours. She's not going to have breath. She's going to be still. The friar, he's real good with potions. But then you have the worst mix-up in literary history where the friar tries to send word to Romeo and it doesn't get through. And they deal with the tension really well, where the friar is like, at FedEx Kinko's.
So funny.
That was so funny, because we've all been there being like, my package was supposed to be there by 11.
Oh, it's not, man.
Why is that there?
Yeah, I'm sorry, bro. There was a mix-up over at Kinko's.
Die.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry that you have to deal with this, but it's out of my hands, man.
And Romeo was already on the run because he had killed Tybalt, so he's coming back because his bestie, who is the brother from Bring It On, I really liked that.
Jesse Bradford!
I was like, hey, howdy!
From Clockstoppers.
Yep.
Clockstoppers.
Anyway. I don't know. And he says, bro, your girl, she dead as hell. She killed herself with poison because you left, because you were gone, because you killed her cousin. She just couldn't live without you. So he rushes back without getting, but first has to get a shootout with all of the LAPD who is on the search for him.
Have to.
And
shoots at a helicopter.
Yep. And takes a priest hostage for a brief moment.
Love that.
And then goes to the church where Juliet's body has been, quote, laid to rest.
With every candle in Verona.
I said, every that bitch is lucky she wasn't wearing any hairspray.
But, like,
she would have gone up in flames.
Even doing all...
That was a very dangerous...
She would have gone up in flames! anyway, I mean, just the set design of that.
Gorgeous.
It was very, very...
I was like, if y'all don't light that many fucking candles at my funeral, I don't want it.
That stuck with me for years.
It was beautiful.
And the neon crosses, too.
Yeah.
Literally, I want that exact copy-paste at my funeral. You got that, Guilty Wars?
I want the same thing, but with neon stars of David. I wanted to just...
No problem. You can make that happen.
Yeah, fuck
and
yeah.
And that, honestly, you're so right, Zach, because I know Romeo and Juliet 1,000 times over, but for some reason, I was like, she's going to wake up in time.
Well, and she fucking does!
Yeah.
So Romeo's over her body, and normally in Romeo and Juliet... He does his whole monologue. He drinks the poison. Then she wakes up. She sees him. She does, like, they're almost separate scenes.
Yeah.
And in this one, you see her fingers twitching to his touch. And you're like, bitch, just turn.
Just
Leo,
pay attention.
Turn right there. She's touching.
She opens her eyes.
She opens her eyes and she smiles. And she goes, there he is. It's like, it's the there you are, Peter.
Yeah.
Smile. It's just like, oh, he's right there. And she reaches out her hand to touch his face instead of just talking. Just Claire, just fucking
just
say,
make a
Juliet,
noise.
Just go, just say something. But instead, she silently, and as her hand goes for Romeo's face, he's drinking the poison. And as her hand touches his face, it's too late. And he turns and goes, it's the closest to an anime gasp that I've seen in a live action movie.
There was no, even Baz Luhrmann editing couldn't really fix that reaction, that timing of it all, because they make that moment stretch out to be 5 seconds long. And you're
bitch,
just like,
what the fuck? Bitch, what the fuck? You've been alive this whole time? About to die.
Yeah,
he's about to fucking die.
He treats it very sweetly.
Yeah,
I'd be pissed. I'd be like,
oh,
I'd be,
yeah.
He didn't. He doesn't go. What?
Yeah, yeah.
He's just like, ah, oh, bitch.
God damn,
I fucked up. Fuck.
So now that we're at the end,
Romeo goes, oh my bad.
Oh shit. Damn. Shit. Oh blood.
No,
now that we're at the end, I feel like this movie, if remade, flipped, would have been fantastic, where it is back in the old times and it is shot still like Baz Luhrmann-y, but with modern
language.
Dialogue and modern language. Although it's just not like now language, but language that you can understand. And see, it would give the same emotion and feeling of Shakespeare, because I feel like most of the time I was just having a hard time following along with it. And I'm kind of thinking about it in like a almost damn near like a Tarantino-esque style or like a spaghetti western type style, because I keep on thinking about those very, very quick zoom ins and all of that. I was like, oh man, this would have been pretty sick with modern speak and with like, you
with
know,
that the good of
like what is it, not Little Women?
Women Talking?
No, yeah, I think it is Little Women.
Pretty Woman.
No. The one with like Aubrey Plaza. It was like a really, it was about nuns fucking each other.
Little Hours?
Little Hours. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That was
but it was just like, this was very old, but the way that they were speaking was very modern. And I fucked with that style. And so seeing this in that style would have been cool, in my opinion.
I don't know that I agree or disagree, but what I love about this adaptation is that it takes something that we've felt and been told our whole life is stuffy and old and inaccessible, and it says, no, with the right emotionality, this story is timeless. This is as modern now as it's ever been.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I find I really enjoy the that they kept the language true.
Yeah.
Because it allowed me to feel it.
Yeah.
And in a way that I couldn't access the text when I was younger.
I think that the just a counterpoint, the suspension of disbelief is just hard for me. Mm-hmm. Like personally, like seeing people that look like me or dressed like me at a certain point in time not sound like me is so hard to believe that if I saw the reverse of people speaking like me but not dressed like me, I'd be like, yeah, I understand why this is happening, but I can at least follow along with it.
More relatable
and more in like a, okay, I've heard people, I've seen people act like this, I've heard people act like this. The only thing that's missing me is they don't dress like that, people don't dress like this anymore, but I know that it's in the past, so I understand.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that like, it's a triumph in this movie, but also I think a fault of it is that their love story is so believable that we forget that the tragedy of it all is supposed to be cautionary.
Yeah.
I leave this movie going like, ugh, if only their families let them love each other. And it's like, that's not really it, man. It's like, yeah, it's their families, but also maybe if these children could like take a breath and not be so swept up in their turbulent emotions.
Well, after Leo shot at the cops, I was like, you have no, you're done. You're done. And then our homie, I was like, how are they going to do the dagger scene? But no, she takes his like pearl inlaid gun, and the shot she takes to her own temple scared the living fucking shit out of me. It was so loud.
It's fucking dark.
And honestly, when it was done and then the police chief is like, do you fucking see what you both have done?
Yeah.
Do you fucking get it now? I was like, this is a tragedy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to feel good walking away from this.
We'll quickly lightning round the rest of it. I mean, you've got great performances top to bottom. Yeah, the Prince, Captain Prince, he's awesome in this. I love Prince. The nurse.
There was
the nurse.
I'm sorry. There was a choral rendition of When Doves Cry.
Doves Cry.
The music, so funny. So yeah, funny. The little choir boy singing.
He's
that was a real highlight.
Maybe he's just like my mother. that boy gets singing. He was like, what am I doing here? Someone
What's
me a
so funny,
microphone.
Too, about the little choir boy singing is that he is killing Prince. Like no one other than Prince maybe ever has done zero expression on his face.
No, none. Because he's redoing it. Yeah. He's going over his
own
vocals.
I wonder what that boy's up to now.
Yeah, I hope he's doing a lot of good background vocals.
Y'all ready for some fun facts?
Fun facts.
All right, I'm doing this in real time. So Leo, much like us, was not enamored with Shakespeare's writing before taking on this role. He said, quote, you hear Shakespeare and you're like, oh God, those long-winded plays that you just don't understand and have no clue about.
Yeah.
He was turned.
Okay.
Oh.
So, you know, it's
many. Possible.
It's possible to come in one way and leave another. So they filmed this in Mexico, and Baz and the crew had to pay a $300 ransom because one of the film's key hairdressers was kidnapped.
What?
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah.
$300?
In Mexico?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit.
And when they gave the kidnappers money, they threw Aldo Signoretti, the hairdresser, out of the car, and he broke his leg.
Oh, but where's the movie about that?
Yeah, really fucking intense.
Holy shit.
Also, $300 ransom, I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you're like, oh, no.
I wouldn't even report that.
I'll throw it.
Let me Venmo you.
Yeah.
That is so fucked.
I know it's like a classist thing to really say, but like,
I'll throw in an extra $100 if you don't throw me out of the car.
Right.
Is there
the medical bills are probably more expensive.
Yeah,
they definitely
fuck work. Insurance, right?
Cash okay, credit. Sorry. So I was curious about this because during Mercutio's death, a plague on both your houses. It was like stormy weather and this crazy wind. I thought that was in post. No, there was an actual hurricane.
Wow.
And it made
in Mexico?
Yeah.
What is going on down there?
Yeah, on the
damn.
So the stormy weather was real and it gave it like this super epic feel.
Wow.
Do you think that they saw the stormy weather and they're like,
Let's go for one more.
Let's shoot it. Let's shoot this scene.
He was game for it. He was like, watch this death, y'all.
Of course.
So they talked about Claire Danes and how great she was. Leo said that she blew her away because she just came onto set. I have it right here. She came right up to me, looked me right in the eye, and just started doing lines. You know what I mean? And there was just this intense eye contact where I think with young actors, you have a fear. You look away naturally, and she just locked on it.
I think the biggest thing with her performances is that she doesn't blink much. She's very much like a, oh, my God, look at how striking my eyes are. Type of actress. So, that makes absolute sense.
But that Claire Danes said that there was a spark between her and Leo.
There's
and
no
they
way you can fake that.
Didn't know what to do with it. So she actually ignored him on set most of the time because, quote, it was too big for us to really accept.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Do you think they fucked later on in life?
I hope so.
I like that idea of them just waiting 20 fucking years and they get to see each other and she's like, I haven't been able to look you in the eye for 20 years. And then they fuck.
If you're that age and you are like living the words of Shakespeare and you are in like, you're in this movie where you know that you're gonna like kiss like no one's ever kissed before.
Makes sense.
My heart's fluttering thinking about it. Mm. I mean, we've all been in plays, except for Garrick, who did not get cast in his. And like when you are young
Jesus Christ.
What the fuck?
Yeah, but who's on the TV show now?
I know.
It still fucking hurts. This is all because I didn't get cast in Romeo and Juliet.
All your career
this is
success.
All fucking spite. Yeah. Anyway, spite is a very powerful tool. Please continue.
Okay.
You know, I was cast in plays where I had kiss scenes. And
I was
it's
too.
Like, it's that, like,
the kiss we did not, like, the most bullshit fucking kiss I did in Thoroughly Modern Millie. I played Millie and Jimmy. And our teacher went, you guys have to hold longer.
Yeah.
You gotta hold that kiss longer. And we never did. We were like,
This is literally shit out of a fucking movie where it's, I mean, and this is like the realistic nature of life. The girl I had a crush on was playing Juliet. So I'm just like, oh, of course I'm going to try to go out for Romeo.
Oh, no.
They didn't give you Romeo.
They didn't even give me a fucking part.
They didn't even give you a tree.
They didn't give me anything.
Oh, Garrick, I'm so sorry.
I was in Into the Woods.
And look at you now.
Into the Woods playing a fucking nymph.
No. Yeah, but look at you now. You get to make out with Sophia. Yeah,
it doesn't fucking matter. I wanted to make out with the crush then.
All right, let's go find her. Let's go see what she's doing.
Hey, man, I get it.
Yeah.
I feel your pain. Anyway. Boz said that there was no one else besides Leo. No one that they could possibly picture.
Never.
Before Claire Danes, they were eyeing Natalie Portman.
No.
That makes sense. Because, again, Claire Danes beats out roles. Like, she just beats out other people for roles.
It is now time for us to decide, is this movie a pleasure, a guilty pleasure, or just plain guilty? This is tough.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Baz Luhrmann, his craft is next level. But I almost feel like...
He's so... Torn.
I feel like
I'm in between
by two, law, so. I have to call every Baz Luhrmann movie a guilty pleasure.
You bite your tongue, doth, sir.
I bite my thumb at you.
I
didn't know. That's so crazy that this was a fucking insult back in the day. It's like, are you out of your fucking... It's like, oh, I don't care. Anyway, sorry.
Please continue. Yeah, get that out.
I will shoot up this gas station if you give me the
finger.
Lit
cigarette.
It's just like... There's so much good, and as you said it before, it's a sugar rush, and your tummy hurts. I guess it is a pleasure. It's like
it is as good
as a adaptation of this can be.
Yeah.
And the style is balls to the wall. It doesn't work as often as it does work.
Yeah.
But when it does work, it is revelatory. It is as exciting as filmmaking can be. And I think that it is absolutely worth seeing because you know the story of Romeo and Juliet, but this is an adaptation that really makes you feel it and it helps you understand the language. And like, if nothing else, you just get these performances that are all timers. Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's worth seeing. Absolutely.
For me, I feel like on this show, our rubric has been that a guilty pee equates it to we want you to see it, but watch it with friends because a straight up pleasure is something you could watch alone. I want to say it's a straight up pleasure where you could watch alone, but I want you to watch it with friends because this is so, so fun to watch with a crowd. And like, it will be better with friends. So I'm giving it a pleasure with the caveat that it's something you should watch with friends. Yeah.
Okay, so this is I am choosing two.
Ooh.
Unfortunately,
no.
I'm so sorry that I'm breaking the rule. I feel like this is a guilty pleasure if you are, of course, a guilty pleasure. Watch it with friends and all of that stuff. It's only a guilty pleasure for me personally because I don't understand what's being said. If I was more of a Shakespearean and more familiar with the works.
It's not you.
But I think it's a pleasure if you know
Shakespeare.
There
you go.
I'm at Corndy on all things.
I'm Kelsey Darrow on all the things.
I'm Gary Bernard on all the things.
And until next time, parting is such sweet sorrow.
Ah, wow. Good one.